line to live righteously.
Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 135, where in the second and third block, I talk with Utah's first married gay couple, or gay married couple, however that goes. They're both returned missionaries, and talk with Seth and Michael in the second and third block, so we'll get to that here coming up. Remember, you can always find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thecultural hall. You can find us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall, find us on Google+, and find us on, Twitter, did I mention that? You can find us there. You can find us basically anywhere. If there's this cool website called google.com, and if you type in The Cultural Hall, you can find us in all of our pages and social medias as far as that goes. Do the YouTube thing too. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher and ask you to please leave a review there for us. If you like the show, you like hearing what we do, you want to have other people find out about it, leaving a review is a great way to do about it. We share your review and other people can see your review and then they go, oh, that sounds like a great show. I'll listen to that. Coming up on Monday night down at Sammy's in Provo, Sammy's Pie Shake to be precise, which is located at 27 North 100 West in downtown Provo. It is Sammy's home evening. We're recording a couple live episodes of The Cultural Hall, sitting down with Jessica Freck and also Ryan Shoup. There will be a sampling of apple beer. Don't worry, there's no alcohol in it. It's delicious apple beer. They'll be down there. Plus, we'll have music from Leo Cody, The Connection, Ashley Hess, Riley Nicole, Lucy Scholl, and this is all sponsored by Sammy's, of course, the Pie Shakes, us here at The Cultural Hall, and then 73 Creative. You can go to theculturalhall.com for more information about that. There are Facebook events, so you can search Sammy's Home Evening and find it there, and RSVP if you want to do that, or just come by. It doesn't cost anything. It does if you're going to get a pie shake, but they're doing like $2 off the pie shake or something like that. $1, $2, whatever. It's a pie shake. You pay. I'd give my left arm for a pie shake. But join us this Monday, July 14th in downtown Provo. And it's Sammy's home evening. Again, the thing starts off at 5, and then I think the live entertainment's going to go like 7, 8, 9 on into the early evening, but we'll get you home before the spirit goes to bed. All right? That's a thing. Doesn't cost anything. Live episodes. Come meet all the Cultural Hall panelists that decide to show up Monday evening, beginning at 5 o'clock. So we'll see you there in Provo. Now it's time for the second and third block of the Cultural Hall.
Hey, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. Is your computer running slow? Are you getting random weird pop-ups on your screen? Is your computer really loud or shutting down or freezing up randomly? The question is, when is the last time you opened up your computer? If it's been a long time, it's probably full of dirt and gunk and it's clogging up all your fans and your components and making everything run really slow. At PC Laptops, we can help. Just bring in your laptop or desktop PC, no matter what brand it is, and we'll scan it for virus and spyware and give you a free hardware diagnostic, and we'll clean out all the dirt and the grime out of your computer for free. Yep, 100% free, free, free. Please visit us at any one of our 8 locations right now for 100% free hardware and software diagnosis and grime cleaning of your computer. Or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE. Or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. At PC Laptops, we love you.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and I'm very honored. It's like, what do we say, gay royalty, maybe? Could that be what this is? It's Seth Anderson and Michael Ferguson, the first legally married gay couple in the state of Utah. Did I get it all right?
That's right.
And there, you're the first any sort of gay couple, right? There wasn't a couple of lesbians who beat you to the punch, right? You guys were... the very first.
We were, and what's so funny, though, is that we actually weren't trying to be the first. Our friends Derek and Moody, who are the lead plaintiffs in the case, weren't down there at the county clerk's office, and so Seth was texting them and saying, where are you guys? You need to be down here. You guys need to be the first.
Oh, so and you were trying to give up the honor.
We were, yeah.
I wasn't even seeking it. It was just, it was so unexpected, too, that when, on the 20th, when our lawyer called and said, hey, this the ruling got struck down right now, and there's like a five-minute window, an hour window, we have no idea, but right now there is no legal anything barring you from being married. And Michael and I had been engaged since the summer. We were planning to be married eventually, like, you know, probably California, and then come back here, knowing full well that the California marriage wouldn't be recognized or legal here. So when that opportunity arose out of the blue, really, we were like, holy cow, yeah. Let's do it. Right now.
Now, I need to let you guys know that in the recent past here, we were talking about what we thought the gayest sport would be, and people thought we were being disrespectful.
Oh, no.
Because we said, we were talking about how we think croquet is maybe the gayest sport, and people are like, how can you be talking about this and then be talking about having these the first couple that's married in the state of Utah and be okay with it? How can you balance, you know, the one with the other? And it's like, whoa, no, settle down. I think everyone knows that we have respect.
That's really funny.
But what is...
Well, yeah, no, camp is a gay thing to appreciate, and I think that's funny. To me, I would say figure skating.
Yeah, right?
It's figure skating.
Yeah, sure, but... And even if it's not figure skating, because I don't want figure skating emails now to come after me, it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't. It was a joke. We can all appreciate
it.
Oh, sure.
It was totally.
Of course.
This was. You might appreciate this little anecdote. There was someone in my ward growing up who told me that they were upset with me because they felt like I had deceived them growing up.
Okay.
Into misleading them to believe that I was actually heterosexual.
Oh, yeah?
And growing up, I took figure skating lessons. Yeah. I took ballet lessons. And so I was saying, which part of the figure skating and ballet was deceiving you into thinking I was straight? And they asked me, they're like, so are you saying that any little boy who takes figure skating and ballet is going to be gay? And I said, well, there's a higher than likelihood chance yeah. that that's going to be the case.
But it's not necessarily, because hang on here. I took ballet in college, so what does that say, right?
It means you're a sensitive kid.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
You're
and
welcome.
I dated figure skaters, women.
Well,
so,
that's a different category.
Okay.
That's a different thing.
It's interesting, so to now kind of peel it back a little bit, not only are you guys the first gay couple married in the state of Utah and fine individuals.
Thank you.
But you mentioned a ward, and I thought that this was interesting, and when I was talking with Seth, that's when I found out. I knew that there was the first gay couple, and I had met you guys through my day job, having the opportunity to talk and have you on the radio there. But I didn't realize that both of you were raised Mormon.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, very much.
Very Mormon.
And I'm from a very deeply 1800 Utah Mormon roots. I've said this in the past that I saw the world growing up through Mormon-colored glasses for most of my life. I went to seminary, was... turn missionary, went to institute, the whole thing. Minus, I never went to BYU. That was never.
That was not a thing.
No, I was not even a, no. BYU was not on my list of to-dos. But yeah, pretty much every other thing, very, very Mormon suburban life.
So let's talk about, we'll go each one of you at a time so people can get a better feel of kind of who you are. We'll start with you, Seth.
Okay.
You said kind of seeing the world through Mormon colored glasses, which
right.
I like that. I like that phrasing. I like my Mormon colored glasses.
I like them sometimes, and I think, I mean, there's definitely things that I learned and still hold on to. I also don't think that growing up Mormon was terrible all the time. There was definitely unpleasant things, especially about being gay and, like, in the closet, stuff like that, that Mormonism doesn't really help with. But
sure.
I learned good things from my Mormon heritage, my Mormon family.
Like what?
The pioneer metaphor I know is sort of overdone, but I'm really kind of back on it. What does that mean? Pioneers mean giving up comfort and familiarity and stepping into the unknown and really leaning into it and saying, I'm doing this. As a gay Mormon, I think you're called to do that. I learned about standing for something. That was one of Hinckley's talks that I really liked was, yeah, sometimes you stand up for things that aren't easy to do. And it's lonely, but you do it because you know that it's the right thing to do. And being sort of out publicly about being gay and Mormon in Utah sometimes isn't very easy, but I lean back on that. Remember, that's what you do.
How old were you when you kind of consciously recognized, hey, this boy thing, I kind of like this boy thing?
I very, very consciously remember being 7 years old.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't know that the word was gay and I didn't know what that meant, but I knew that I was different and I didn't know, I didn't have the words or the concepts to put to it to make sense of it. But I very consciously knew at seven that I was different than other boys.
And then growing up through that priesthood and all those things, but obviously there's a maturity of of seeing, I don't know what this is, to being like, maybe I do know a little bit of what this is. And then subsequently serving a mission. Talk about that.
By the time I was 11, I definitely knew what the word was, and I definitely knew that church told me that it was very, very bad. And that began for me this retreat into closetness, into... Well, I don't even
I really like Boy Scouts.
Yeah, I love Boy Scouts. And as I got older, I mean, so that was 11, and then you go, and you're not having sex when you're 11. It's whatever, but
which is good. You shouldn't
you
be should, having
probably
sex.
Probably shouldn't be
at 11,
or in high school. I don't think.
Either. No,
so,
no,
I mean,
you
in high
shouldn't.
School, I kept myself very, very busy with extracurricular activities. I had part-time jobs. I went. I was on student council. I was a swimmer. I did all kind. I had good grades, and I kept myself very busy for the purpose of saying, when somebody asked me, well, why don't you have a girlfriend? I could be like, oh, well, I'm just so busy with all my
other
life
things. When would I have time for
that? I have time for that?
You know what I'm saying?
So that was an effort on my part to kind of
conscious
shield.
Effort, though?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much. And also recognizing gay things that you like, for example, like Madonna. My parents gave me Madonna's Immaculate.
Wait, so I can't like Madonna or be in ballet? You
well,
guys are
we're cleaning
you know,
up
you
for
talk
Spain
about
also.
Judgmental
it'll
things.
Raise
you
some
guys
eyebrows.
Are taking away everything I like right now. Hold on, can't
it will raise some eyebrows. I fear, or it did at least for me in the 90s. But I had to hide that too. I couldn't talk openly about like, oh, I like this Madonna record. Like I like this song. I like Bette Midler. I used to listen to my mom's Bette Midler albums and Barbara Streisand. And like, that was just something you didn't talk about.
Seriously, Barbara Streisand?
I did.
Too.
Funny
okay.
girl, totally.
Yeah. Let's keep going.
I gotta write this. Apparently, I gotta get a new CD collection.
Yes,
Barbara Streisand. Okay.
So I couldn't talk about that. That was a shield, you know, to keep people not looking too closely, which also puts up walls between you and people, because nobody can really get too close to you or really get to know you when you're so afraid that
well, when
they're
it's not you, essentially,
out.
It's right. just not you. No one can get
surface.
To know this thing that is
exactly.
not you.
Yep. And then I finished high school, seminary, all the whole thing. I was
graduated.
Yep.
From seminary, I mean.
Seminary from high school. And then the mission thing came up. And actually during high school, I wasn't sure I wanted to do the mission. That wasn't like a on the top of the list, like an absolute. I mean, I graduated high school. That was the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. You graduate high school.
Was family pushing it?
A little bit. Not too much where there was a lot of pressure, but there definitely was pressure. And it's social pressure too, because your friends are leaving.
Sure.
And like, now you're all alone.
Well, you're not
going
to go? Why aren't you going?
Yeah,
why
what's wrong? And then it raises the question of like, oh, something must be wrong with you.
Well, it wasn't girls, so what is it?
Yeah, well, <love. laughs> So that kind of came later for me, and I liked going on a mission. I went to Russia. And
really? What part of Russia?
Samara, Russia, okay. Which is southeast of Moscow, about 12 hours on a train. It's on the Volga River. It's actually very...
So is that a pretty...
It's actually a really big city.
Okay.
I mean, Moscow and Petersburg are the two... like Russia's that everybody knows. And then Samara was more working class, I guess, not the poorest place that I lived in Russia, but it was a big city. Stalin had a secret bunker there during the war. And it was Russia, and I'm from Arizona. So the weather was kind of rough and brutal. Yeah.
Scary
also,
though, conditions wise?
More scary in the sense that, and I was there like right post 9/11 too. So I was in Russia in September 2001.
Oh my gosh.
And I'd only been out since, oh man. I went
out on a mission, we're talking.
Right. I've been out on a mission.
Hey-o.
I got to Russia in May 2011, and then September happened. So I had maybe 6 months. Everything past that was negative. I mean, was not church related. It was anti-American.
Okay.
I got yelled at more, go home Yankee, than I did. Like, go home Mormon. They don't know what Mormons are in Russia. They have no idea. And they just knew you're some weird American trying to sell them some weird American way of life that they don't want because they're Russian and stay out. That was more of the negativity. But they were also very nice. That's not representative of everybody. There was really nice people and I had a really good time. then, and the other good thing about being a missionary and when you're a gay missionary is that there's a sort of window of time where nobody's asking you any questions.
Right, which is great. Which it's two years of peace. Like, totally. Hey, you know what? No one's going to ask me why I'm not dating.
No one.
Because I'm not supposed
to
be.
You're not supposed to be. You're not supposed to be thinking about it. You're not, nothing. And I really appreciated that reprieve. Is that the right word? And I also know that like a lot of gay missionaries who go, and I did, I've a lot of that I've spoken to, you think that this is your sacrifice and you're going to get home and everything's going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be cured of whatever you have.
That the mission is
affliction.
A cure of homosexuality.
Right.
Really?
This is your sacrifice. This is like you are putting it forward saying, look, I'm going to be the best missionary 100%. And when I do that, then God is going to make me not gay.
Hmm.
And it totally sets you up for failure and feeling really crappy because that's not what happens. But then I got home and there's again like a short little tiny bitty window of time where still nobody's really asking you anything.
Sure.
But then that window starts to close very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, so who are you dating? When are you getting married?
Right.
And that was what pushed me forward to going, holy cow, I have to deal with this and I don't know how to deal with this anymore.
Okay. Let's catch up to that in just a second. Michael, mm-hmm. Let's talk about you.
Okay.
Utah raised?
No, raised in Virginia, actually.
Okay.
Out in the mission field.
Beyond the Zion Curtain. Talk about that, then. That's obviously a different experience than living here in Utah.
It was. Being raised community in the of saints in Northern Virginia is very influenced by the D.C. surroundings. You have a lot of military, a lot of law enforcement, a lot of government workers. And so...
is that what your folks did? Which one of those?
Yeah, government
worker. Okay.
And so the conversation about Mormonism is so, for me anyways, growing up was so inextricably linked to the conversations about politics and about America's chosenness and its unique role in the world. And so as far as current events and how they fit into Mormon prophecies and mm-hmm. end times, for me, all of that was very, very interlinked. That was just a part of the flavor of Mormonism that was my cultural upbringing.
Cool. That's a fascinating kind of perspective to come from where it's like, and this is a sign. Look at, you know, how this is the fulfilling of this prophecy. Plus, I would imagine knowing some of the government leaders and their membership in the church, there were probably some pretty impactful, significant folks that were in circles with you growing up.
Certainly, yeah, in the various stakes and when you had, you know, area meetings. I think that for a long time now in the history of the modern LDS church, that Washington, D.C. has been sort of this emerald city that you've had a lot of LDS leaders from Salt Lake who have gone, you know, Benson is the one that comes to mind. And this is a whole historical tangent about the influence of the 1950s, 60s Washington era. Mm-hmm. On Benson and then
President Benson,
and then how he imported a lot of the kind of cultural dialogue, him alongside with Cleon Skousen. I mean, these were some really formative cultural players for the modern conservative Mormon theological and political voice that, you know, we're drinking from those wells of kind of Americana, this resurgence of, a hope to mainstreamize Mormonism during that middle 20th century period. Anyways, that's more of my husband's domain, though. Yeah. He's a historian.
I know. We're going to get pretty... I'm sure we'll get pretty deep into all this stuff here in the next little bit. So, brothers and sisters, you the oldest, you the middle?
No, I'm the youngest. I'm the youngest.
Youngest. Uh-huh. So, your family pretty orthodox? Pretty...
Uh-huh. I mean, terrific, believing, loving LDS home. And again, similar to Seth, growing up, I checked all the boxes, seminary, Eagle Scout. I did go to BYU. Not only did I go to BYU, I was about the most square BYU student you can imagine.
How do you mean?
Lived in the dorms for 3 years.
Sure.
Was a resident assistant for, you know, two of those.
Yeah.
Freshman year, executive secretary in my student ward would snitch to the bishop and tell him which people on the floor were watching rated R movies.
I mean, really?
I was kind of... insufferable.
Okay.
I was sort of like the Hitler Youth version of a BYU freshman.
Thank goodness he's not like that anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'm still getting that vibe from him, but maybe we'll flesh that out here in a little bit. So, at what point did you go, maybe this boy thing?
Definitely when I was in fifth grade.
So how old is that?
So 10 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. That I had very distinct crushes on, you know, male peers.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have the vocabulary to identify that as gay or in any way abnormal. I mean, this is the thing, is that this dimension of one's emotional and sexual and psychological development is such an organic process.
Mm-hmm.
Again, bookmark this as a whole nother tangent.
Sure.
That I take a lot of issue with conversations in the Mormon big tent that imply that homosexuality is somehow, you know, a abnormality of development, or that something went wrong
mm-hmm.
during the course of one's upbringing in order to result in homosexuality or in a gay identity.
Well, sure. And there are still people that, as you talk to them, that go, as far as the nurture thing is, oh, well, they were probably abused as a kid.
Oh,
and
gosh,
you just
yeah.
go,
that's such a,
okay.
A trope.
Okay. So that's how people are gay, is that they are abused. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there is any, because I hate making sweeping statements where it's like, that is totally false. Do you think that there's any truth that lies in something like that, that maybe someone who was abused, that could lead them?
Well, here's the thing, childhood abuse is so traumatic. There's a reason why in the New Testament, Jesus says multiple times, like, woe unto them who harm one of these little ones. You know, it's
right.
better that a millstone be hung around their neck and they be drowned in the depths of the sea. When you abuse and take advantage of children, in whatever way, it has lasting consequences in mm-hmm. their life. And so the ripple effects they're complex, they're multi-layered. It's incorrect and unfair and untruthful to say, like, oh, abuse causes homosexuality.
Right.
You know, that being said, like, the outward ripples from early childhood abuse and trauma are so complex and multidimensional that again is a whole nother conversation in and of itself.
Man, but that's four simple, other whole other conversations we have.
Right? I know, we're just like making a list here. Making a list.
Write that down.
That's how I roll. That's how I roll.
I would just throw this out too, that statistically it's straight identified men who abuse girls more than boys, who would therefore become super gay, and lots of gay people. Like, the statistics and that kind of sexual abuse is skewed. Or not skewed, but doesn't support the makes you a gay man thing.
Right.
Just because I think people may be interested in addition.
Yeah.
You said it's kind of more of your husband's point of view. Talk about your guys' academics, where you guys are coming from, so that
sure.
it gives sort of credences to some of the things that you guys are saying.
You bet. So I did biochemistry for my undergraduate degree, and then went to medical school for a couple of years. Transferred from a medical degree program into a PhD program because it became pretty apparent to me that my core passions are in the research domain as opposed to in the clinical medical setting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finishing up this summer my PhD at the University of Utah. I study neural systems. I study large-scale distributed networks in the brain. And in particular, I study ways biologically that our social natures are emergent as human beings from our neurobiology.
Okay.
And my undergrad was in economics and Russian, because at the time I thought I was going to work in international business and work abroad.
Cool. Plus you can get all the credits because it's like, man, I already speak Russian. Let's just do this thing.
Right. And I went after my mission. I did go back to Russian for a semester, and that was awesome. That was way more fun.
And they wouldn't ask you about being married in Russian, because they're like, don't marry our Russian women. We're not talking about
right.
it.
And I was very young, too. That was a good time. I had fun with that. But then I came back and I was like, actually, I don't really want to do international business. That's really not my passion. And so now I am in graduate school at the University of Utah. I'm a second year master's student, and I'm a social historian. And I study the American West broadly. More specifically, I study the history of sexuality. I study gay and lesbian history in the West United States. So I study mostly the 19th and 20th century issues of sexuality, gender, how we are living in the world we do now with this binary gender system, which historically wasn't the case. And in the American West, which is a fascinating place and a problematic term, actually, too, where is the West? Like, it's sort of
Mississippi,
right?
Mississippi West. That's the West.
Is Utah,
pal.
The West. Is California, the
are
West.
We the Midwest. Like, where are we?
Exactly.
Is this the West? Where am I? Utah. Is that the West?
Yep.
Okay, so I just wanted to give people kind of an idea of where you're coming from, because if it's like, and what do you do? I'm a barista at the Starbucks. I feel right. like it's a little different giving some basis of where sure. you guys come from.
Let me add to that too. Then I do study Mormon history because I do study Utah.
Are you sort of nerdy about it?
Kind of. I mean, it's funny because it's the disparity between humanities and the sciences between me and Michael is, I think, funny. And I do, when he starts talking really scientific and really mathy and stuff, that's very sexy to me. Yeah. I just have to go and I just read history books.
Yeah. Well, as he was talking, I don't know if you saw that. Like, I was really trying to grasp exactly what you were talking about. And at one point I almost shouted out, "Dumb it down. I don't know what you're talking about." But I think a lot of people got it. So I appreciate the kind of the dynamic of where it is, the very one sciencey side and the one. Mm-hmm.
It's a good pair.
You know, the other side.
We
yeah.
have spirited discussions back and forth about things that other. It was funny. We had a friend visiting us one time, and Seth and I were parrying back and forth about,
oh, yeah.
you know, social constructivism versus essentialism. And our friend looked at us and she's like, "Was that a joke or is this really how you talk?" And we're like, welcome to the Anderson Ferguson home.
You know, a side question, but that I've always wondered with gay couples, do you not take the last name or does one take the last name or what?
You know, this is a good question. So my middle name is Adam. My given middle name is Adam. So already on, for example, in my field, on publications, it says Michael A. Ferguson.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking of taking on a hyphenated last name, so that would be Michael Anderson Ferguson, so that already kind of in my professional life, the A could either be Adam or Anderson, and it wouldn't be disruptive.
And while I find that incredibly sweet, I'm on the other side of the coin where I argue that a woman taking a man's last name is this weird remnant of some property kind of system where uh-huh. she like has to be subsumed into his identity.
Sure.
I find that really sexist.
Which I think
and
it's so
odd.
Funny that yeah, Seth is like, "Don't take my last name. It's so patriarchal and sexist." I'm like, "But it's sweet."
Yeah, it is sweet. But I want it to be a sweet gesture.
I think that's one of the benefits of being in a gay relationship is like you're just not expected that that's what's going to happen.
Right.
Well, I would say that's one of the benefits of being in a 21st century relationship.
I think women still fall into that.
I think they do too. And here's the thing. So I'm married.
Yeah.
My wife didn't take my last name, and I try and be so 21st century because I agree with you, man. You know, each is their own individual person. But to me, what it is, I don't think that's what it is. We have a child, but it's her child from a previous relationship. So mm-hmm. the you know her kid mm-hmm. has her last name. And so she will say that it's because she wants to be able to have the same last name as her child. And I respect that.
Sure.
But to me, I can't help even just the smallest. And if you could see my fingers, I'm doing like the smallest. That the part of me wants me to have her to have my last name because it's like, yeah, I'm with that guy. And I'm proud of being with that guy.
Yeah.
And there's other ways that she can do it. And she certainly does. But there is that little bit where I'm just like,
why don't you change your name to be with hers?
Well, because I actually have the same name as her father's name.
Oh.
And I don't know. It's dumb patriarchal familial pride. That's all it is. And when I talk about it, then I feel stupid. Then I have self-loathing about the fact that I fall into these
things.
But
no, I wouldn't call it dumb or hate yourself too much because what you're really doing is you're fighting against millions of years of human evolution that our tribal oriented mind is so ancient that you don't have to have too much guilt about those impulses coming through every now and again.
But a little bit.
Just maybe a little bit.
A little bit. Coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall, I want to talk about how you guys, you mentioned the Pioneer Heritage.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the last maybe decade of homosexuality and Mormonism and how you guys fall into that and where you guys see your role as the church continues to evolve and your foundations in the LDS mm-hmm. church.
Sure.
So we'll do that coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Cool.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now.
Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
It's time for the third block of the Cultural Hall, and Michael's mid-selfie, so maybe Seth will... Seth is mid-selfie, too.
I'm ready.
No, that's fine. Those are good-looking phones. Did you guys get the two-for-one?
We did. Seth is our technology master. He does a great job with that.
I've never had an iPhone, and I'm totally okay with that.
But it's a... You have an H... Is it an
HTC? It's HTC One M8. I love it.
Well, well.
It is fabulous.
What sold you on the M8?
I loved the HTC One that I had previously, and it was just the newer one, and mm-hmm. it had some more things, had more bells and whistles, and the other one was fabulous, so I had to have this one. And I qualified for an upgrade, so I was like, all right.
Can I ask you a few things about being gay? Because you've already said fabulous.
One of my go-to words.
And you've already said super as well. So I'm wondering if, in addition to ballet and figure skating, if
certain words are the
words. Yeah.
So if I'm a young Mormon person and questioning, and I go, okay, ballet, no. I don't ever say super and fabulous. I can't stand Madonna and Bette Midler. Am I safe? Is that the thing?
Not necessarily. No, you know, if you have a penchant for leather, if you, you know, there's...
That's not really a thing, is it?
Oh, my... Or yes, it's totally a thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, not amongst
everybody.
Here's the
not
thing.
Not amongst everybody,
Here,
no.
Here's the thing. Let's throw it out there. You could be any type of person and right. be gay and be any type of person and be straight,
that,
right?
There you go. And that's the there key thing there. Is to remember that in this world of heterosexual ecology, there is every type of species
right.
in the rainforest.
Because I think we get into danger when it's like, that thing is so gay, or that's so gay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And this is funny. Seth and I get onto Seth's case about about this case with each other, that we'll just say, ugh, that's so gay, in a derogatory way. And I'm like, ugh, look at us, like, with the blood and sins of this generation, like... just kind of using this verbiage that's pretty offensive and, you know, negative toward gay people. But it's just such a cultural norm that, like, it even pops up in our vocabulary. But that's me.
I think it's funny, though. I know some people really find it offensive and don't like it. And I'm like, I'm not going to let a word like Voldemort scare me. I'm going to use it and say it.
Right. What the? That's a name that shall not be named.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you just say
that? You did not say the gay word.
How many selfies are you taking, pal?
Well, no, you just have to get a good one.
Okay,
is
keep
the
going.
Thing.
Top down. Top down. Make sure you get the angle top down. Duck lips.
That is the
You'll have to
angle.
Share that with me so I can post it with this episode.
I'll do a whole mini series.
Yeah, please. Would you mind? Make it an Instagram 4 block. Here's the reason why I hate that kind of preconceived thing. Then we'll move back into what I wanted to talk about. I always have loved dancing.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And when I was in middle and high school, I wanted to take dance classes.
Mm-hmm.
I am a heterosexual male who was afraid of taking dance classes because I didn't want to be like, oh, it's that kid. He's gay. And so for a long time, I was like, you know what? I love dance. I love swing dancing. I minored in dance in college, so it was modern dance and all those things. And I would have done it and maybe could have made something more of it if I would have had more time.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, that's what gay kids do.
Oh.
And so I didn't do it. Yeah. And then I was on my mission and I was like, that's the stupidest thing in the world.
It is.
You know, you can be whatever and do whatever. And it doesn't, you know, doing one thing doesn't mean another thing. So I came home and I went, okay, I'm going to do this.
Good.
But I sort of get mad at that, you know, that culture.
That's the power of a social construction, right? Like, it's made up, but you experience it as real. There's nothing anywhere that says you can't be a dancer other than just like what we assume.
Yeah.
But man, fighting against that's really tough.
Really tough. Even post-mission and, you know, flirting with all the girls in the dance class, there was still a... And then they're like, well, he's not a very good dancer, so he's probably not gay.
He's safe.
So I want to talk about modern-day Mormon gay pioneers.
Okay, let's do it.
And I feel like we visited with a lot of these folks, so maybe we're going to talk about some contemporary, if we can say contemporaries to you guys, within Mormonism.
Okay.
A long time ago, we talked with Mitch Main.
Mm.
You guys are aware who that is?
Uh-huh. Yes.
He was serving in a bishopric in San Francisco in the Bay Area, and I guess for me, he was the first one that, as I hear about, like, the Mormon church kind of starting to be okay with gay people being a church.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's to me who mine goes to. And Seth, you're shaking your head. So what do you,
long before him in terms of like being an out gay Mormon?
Yeah. That was all. That was also able still to be a part of the church and say, listen, the church loves me. I'm gay. The church will love you. You're gay. Come.
Nothing's coming to mind right now, but I was shaking my head more into in disagreement with that premise.
With the premise of
what the church loves you and you can be gay at church. I totally disagree. And to speak very frankly, I think the Mormon church is a very toxic place for gay people.
Okay. Well, we'll certainly get into that then, because that's not just a thing that I can go, oh, okay, yeah. Well, sure, that's great.
That's a big statement. Oh, moving
on. Anyway. And then we have other individuals, folks that we've talked to here. Certainly, we've talked to John DeLynn, who has done a lot to at least talk about sexuality, studying sexuality, and also with the Mormon Church.
Yep.
We've had a woman by the name of Wendy Montgomery.
Oh, we know Wendy.
Her and her family, her son came out as gay, and they were Prop 8 advocates at the time he came out as gay, and now they've, you know, come 180 degrees and have a film that makes various film circles about, you know, hey, really, you know what, we didn't know what this was like, and now we have a gay son and it needs to be more about love. So there's another one there. I'm trying to think of other people that we've had that have dealt with homosexuality and Mormonism. We had Tyler Glenn, who is the lead singer of the band Neon Trees, and that was shortly after he had really very publicly came out.
Okay.
And he sort of spoke as where he's like, you know what, I love being a Mormon person. I also recognize that I'm gay, and the rest of the stuff I've not yet worked out.
Mm.
Is essentially how he came across. And then most recently we had an advocate, gay rights advocate, Kevin Klusterman, who came and sort of spoke about that. So it's
Michael,
not,
he was the one who got in trouble with our tweet, right? Was that him?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
This was in the New York Times.
Oh, no. He did. He did talk about this.
On the 20th, when we got married and I was tweeting it, he sent me a tweet and said, congratulations. And it turns out that his bishop saw that and called him in, and he got in trouble for that, for saying congratulations to us on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A very public declaration of congratulations of same-sex marriage in the state of Utah.
Right.
And I think it was actually, and we go into great depth in the episode with him about how I think at that action, his temple recommend was taken away from him.
I think so. I think that's what I remember.
Not
reading.
Church membership and not disciplinary action, but just like, hey, you know what? I'm going to hold on to this for a little while.
Still, that's crazy to me.
It is. Absolutely. And especially now where you fast forward from when that was December 20th?
Yep, December 20th.
So then you fast forward to the whole Kate Kelly and excommunication and the church discipline that existed there, and then the tentative John DeLynn decision that we don't know if there will be or if there won't be.
Yep.
So we're not shy about it here in the Cultural Hall. In fact, sometimes people are like, what, are you gay lovers? But I just think it's...
because we're lovers of all humanity.
Yeah, because Jesus said love everyone. Treat them kindly, too. That even means the lesbians and the gay folks, too. That's how that song goes, as far as I'm concerned. But I want to talk to you about it, because I don't know that... I'm sure that there are lots of people who agree with you, but then also a lot of people who disagree with you as far as the Mormon church being a toxic place for gay people. Now, I will premise that this is a very pro... faithful member of the church. So rather than, my hope is that we can be honest, but that I also don't want it to be, this is Mormon folk are terrible. I'd like to maybe focus on some things that we are working on doing right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then some things that we could work on rather than it's terrible.
Right.
Throw
it all the way.
You know, everyone get out. If you're gay and you're trying to reconcile your Mormonism, you should get out, because you'll never be able to reconcile Mormonism. Unless, of course, that's how you feel, in which case, you know, we can kind of say that and then focus elsewhere.
I have like 1,000 things popping in my head right now that I need to write down so I can parse them all out.
here's a piece of paper. just scratch out Barbara Streisand.
The premise then, I mean, like, to even begin talking about something, and we have to put these parameters on it and say, well, there's certain things, and you didn't say this, but like, implied in other dialogue, like, well, there's certain things you can't say. Like, you got to be nice. And that's a very Mormon thing to me. Mormons are
sure.
want to be seen as nice. You can't diagnose a problem and always be nice. Like, there are some times where you have to say, this is the problem, and this is why it's a problem. And that may not be nice.
Okay, like, so what's the problem?
Oh, there's... That's a huge question.
Yeah.
Well, just to, like, let's jump back to a minute ago when you said people ask you, why do you have so many gay people on your show?
Uh-huh.
And I would assume those are faithful Mormon listeners.
Sure. To which I say, it's a thing that's going on, and there's a lot of people that are dealing... And trying to figure their way through it.
And that, I think, true, exactly. But to a normal church-going Mormon, that the knee-jerk reaction is to even go to, why would you even have them on? Instead of realizing their humanity, that they're not these icky gay people who, like, spawn on the floor somewhere. These are your own people.
Yeah,
like, these are
sisters.
Your brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. These are your aunts and uncles, your parents. These are people in your ward. And to treat them with such disdain
sure.
and so much... animosity. Wendy's spoken very often about the horrible things people say to her at church.
Mm-hmm.
That is shocking to me. Like, and that is a problem. And we need to talk about that and saying, look, there are a handful of Mormons, and there's more than a handful, who are very unkind and are very unwilling to listen,
mm-hmm.
who are happy to talk about us, but will never talk with me,
mm-hmm.
is a problem.
Sure. Let me tell you, that is why we continue to, you know, have episodes like this where I want people to understand that it's not, first of all, that it's not just a couple of people who are gay and, oh, there's no one that's gay in my ward, so this isn't a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And by problem, I just mean something that they're going to ever have to deal with, not that homosexuality is a problem, but that it is a part of the church,
mm-hmm.
that these are people who are brothers and sisters of our Heavenly Father, you know, children of our Heavenly Father who need to be treated well. And there are some people who just, because they don't know anyone who is gay, they don't have anyone.
They don't know
well,
anyone.
Yeah, I guess I should say. There's not anyone who's out in their circles. They haven't had to have this conversation. And for me, I think it's vital to be having those conversations. So I'm not asking you to be nice necessarily, but I certainly don't want this to become a...
Oh, I'm not. Like, I'm all about talking. I like, what's his face? Tyler Glenn, is that his name?
Uh-huh.
I find this baffling, but he's always like, I'm gay and I love God, as if those are mutually exclusive.
Right.
Like, yeah. That's really weird to me that that's where he's at. And I really can only point to a Mormon upbringing to be like, well, somewhere along the lines, you got the idea that if you're gay, you can't love God or be religious. And I think that's crazy.
How did you, because there was certainly that thing, as you talked about, you know, I don't want to talk about dating,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm back from a mission, I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, you know, when we're taught within the church that in order to reach the highest level of the celestial kingdom, that you need to be married, and, you know, where marriage within the church for two men or two women is not something that's acceptable. How did you say, oh, okay. How do you work that out? Or did you just say, well, then it must not.
I'll tell this story. I don't tell this very often, but I'll tell you this because I'm in a very different place with spirituality. It was post-mission and I was at home again, begging on my knees, like, please, Heavenly Father, make me not gay. Please take this away.
Literally praying to take the gay away.
For years. Begging. And when people say, well, you didn't try hard enough, big middle finger, no, wrong. I tried very hard. Let me preface this also by saying, like, I am right now, and I use this term and it really bugs Michael and other people, but I say I'm an atheist, theist, gay Mormon. And everybody goes, what the hell does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm open to the idea of the universe. I like the idea of the universe, and I can accept that perhaps the universe has a consciousness that I don't understand, but that doesn't mean that the universe is actively engaged in my life or, like, anything that I have to, helping me find my keys or something like that. I don't know. But I do, and I don't tell the story very often, but I was post-mission at home, wasn't straight like I thought I'd be, freaking out about what am I going to do, how is this going to work, and I was pleading and begging, and clear as a bell to me, I guess I'd say voice, I don't, it came in a reply that said, stop asking me to fix you, there's nothing wrong. And that really was a turning point for me. It was where I like, my eyes opened, I looked around like, who just said that? That was really, so in the Mormon vernacular, you know, personal revelation, I suppose. But at 21, I was like, this, whatever the church is saying, they're wrong on certain things. And being from a faith tradition that's open to new revelation, that's open to change, that's not that proudly proclaims that the heavens are open, that there is dialogue back and forth. Mm-hmm. I cannot understand how the church can clamp down so hardly on this issue and say, no, never. This will never change. No, wrong. That's weird to me in my Mormon family faith tradition of openness.
Okay, hang on. How about for you then, Michael?
Which aspect?
So you come home and you obviously recognize that you're gay, right? Uh-huh. You served a mission in
Arizona.
Arizona. Uh-huh. Is that how you guys met?
No, but I loved that when we did meet 10 years later, or 9 years later, I guess, that he had been in my city where I lived, where I had left to go to Russia, and he was there on my streets. And
it made it feel kind of charmed.
It was in that universe kind of way that the universe had laid that out.
In that God kind of way, so I'm just teasing. So you come home and you go, yeah. Oh man, I worked hard. Did you find yourself trying to pray the gay away as well?
Oh my gosh, did I ever? Yeah, before my mission, I was already engaged in serious bargaining with the heavens. I went to BYU for 2 years just because I was kind of young. I started when I was 17, so I had to get, you know, the time in before I could put my papers in for my mission. And there were evenings when I would just run. I would just physically run because I didn't know how else to escape from my same-sex desire.
Hmm.
And I would just run and cry. And it was as if I was literally trying to run away from myself because I was that desperate to divorce myself from my same-sex desire. Mm-hmm. And there was one evening in particular, at this point I, you know, was waiting for my mission call, and I ran from lower campus at BYU, just ran crying to the temple and threw myself on the front lawn of the temple, just pleading with the heavens to take away my same-sex desire.
Mm-hmm.
On my mission, similarly, I thought that if I serve with exact obedience, that I'll prove myself worthy of the blessings of a celestial inheritance, and I'll have this cross taken from me.
Mm-hmm.
When I returned from my mission and started dating women, I was in a real dilemma because I didn't want to talk about my same-sex desire because I felt like if I talk about it and acknowledge it, that it will solidify the reality of it.
Sure.
I could not in good conscience continue dating women without disclosing this to them.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who thinks that this is something that you can just keep a secret and keep to yourself and not have it affect your most intimate relationships with other people is just out of touch with how the psychology, the emotionality surrounding your same-sex desire and your desires for love affect every aspect of your intimate life, you know? So I went to the bishop of my student ward my first year back from my mission because I was dating a woman who I was really serious about. I had taken her home to Virginia for holidays to meet family. I met her family and I was going to propose to her. And beforehand, I told my bishop, I have same-sex attractions. And my bishop's reply was, oh, well, that's not a big deal. We just turn down the dimmer switch on your attractions to men and turn up the dimmer switch on your attractions to women.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was his sincere, earnest counsel. Mm-hmm. That was, to him, truth. And that was the best, most compassionate response that he had for me. And so he referred me to a counselor at the BYU Counseling Center who was a reparative therapist. And that's where I started what for me personally became the better half of a decade going through reparative therapy, conversion therapy, retreats.
Tell people what all that is.
So conversion therapy, also sometimes called reparative therapy, is not even worthy of being called therapy to begin with.
Okay.
Because it's totally hackneyed, pre-Stonewall, Freudian, false doctrine.
But specifically, it's essentially
it's an attempt to change your sexual and emotional orientation and to rid yourself of same-sex desire and replace it with opposite-sex desire.
That's pretty hefty.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously, I can tell from you it's not something that worked or works.
Yeah.
But wow.
And that's
Like a rewiring. And I know we talk about wiring and then we start to think about shock therapy.
Yeah.
And for a while, that was something that was part of that, right?
It was regular.
Was that something that you were ever involved in?
I personally did not have the electroshock aversion therapy. I've talked to people who, I mean, participated in it clearly during the 70s, throughout the 80s.
Because it's not something
into the 90s.
That for a good, at least, decade has.
Well, this is the thing, though. I've talked to people, multiple people, who within the past decade claim that they've been in electroshock aversion therapy. Mm-hmm. This is the thing, though, is that being the survivor of some kind of abusive intervention along these lines, it's really, really hard to talk about it publicly because there's so much embarrassment, trauma, shame associated with it that it just does not feel worth stepping out and reliving over and over again publicly something that has gone to the core of who you are and told you that you as a person are deficient or wrong or broken or bad.
Right. Which, I mean, you make that statement too, and I do want to get to the stuff that we started talking about, where what has the church been doing right, if anything?
Okay.
And then what can we do as members of the church, as people who may be in your similar situation, to make things better? You said that something, at least how I interpreted it, is that if you're a homosexual person, the Mormon church is not going to be a great place for you to be.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to, in a utopian way, talk about how we could make that be that way. Because I always get sad when I feel like people have to choose either being gay. I mean, not that being gay is a choice, but, you know, following that, or being Mormon.
Yeah. Here's, if I can interject something here, I think that culturally in America, not just within Mormonism, that we have religiously fetishized sex. We've created a religious fetish around sex and sexuality.
Okay.
We've made it such a huge deal that when we even think about, for example, when we think about the word morality, we think, oh, that's sex. That's a code for talking about sexual activity. Morality is not purely about sex. Morality is a huge field of ethics and of classical searches for goodness and virtues.
He's talking about sex right now.
Yeah. But that's just like one tiny litmus test to demonstrate how obsessed we've become with sex, to the degree that we think that sex and that our sexuality are somehow incapable of fitting well into the same suitcase as our spirituality and as you know, our religious devotional practice. Especially in Mormon theology, human sex and sexuality contribute to the purification, the refinement of the spiritual nature.
Sure.
To be a complete whole individual on the path to godhood, you integrate your sexuality, your body parts and passions into your spiritual identity and into your growth of light and your growth toward your ultimate divine destiny. And so this is just from the starting gate, something that I have a huge problem with when people try to say that the righteous path of discipleship looks like compartmentalizing your sexual nature from your spiritual nature. Already, I feel like you're setting yourself up to be a fragmented individual instead of what I view as the authentic path toward our divine destiny, which is integration of all of these complex, beautiful components of what it is to be a child of God. Part of that being a sexual being.
One of the greatest things that I've learned, actually, as I've done these different interviews, we did an interview about sexuality a couple of years ago now. And in the interview, it was discussed, you know what? God gave you those parts.
Mm-hmm.
He gave you the feelings, you know, everything about it.
Yeah.
And he, you know, it was discussed, and I had never thought about it that way. But that, you know, it was like the reason why that's pleasurable is because God wanted you to have that be pleasurable. You know, if you believe in this creation and that he gave, you know, everything to you for a reason, as we do, we hear that all the time, you know, that the sexuality and everything about your intimacy mm-hmm. is from God. It's not, oh, this is dirty. And you know, that, like you say, is a whole different rant for a whole different kind of conversation.
And this is a very long tradition inside of Christianity. You know, you can go back to 1 Corinthians, to Paul's letter to the Corinthians. And in chapter 12 of that letter, he talks about the body of Christ. And he says, you cannot say to any part of the body, oh, I don't need you. Oh, you're unclean. Like, you shouldn't be part of the whole body of Christ. Right now, in the LDS church, we have this very sad, very unfortunate dismissal of all of these spiritual gifts that are contained within the queer community. Like, the queer body of saints have so much to give to the whole body of Christ. Mm-hmm. If we're talking, you know, in that metaphor that Paul lays out here. This isn't just an issue of like, oh, the church needs to figure out how to be nicer to the queer community. This is a matter of like, the church is living below its spiritual privileges because it is turning away and making feel unwelcome an entire set of individuals mm-hmm. who have unique gifts and blessings that the mainstream church doesn't even realize how much it needs in order to grapple with the challenges of modernity that it's currently facing.
So what are we doing right?
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that a huge thing that is being done right is having these conversations more and more. Seth and I are seeing active, believing, you know, Sunday to Sunday attending members of the LDS church asking really hard questions that I would say even pre-2008 that weren't being asked with this degree of openness and of frankness. I think that's hugely positive.
Yeah, for anything, obviously, for any action to occur, there is that discussion that goes on before.
Yeah, and I wouldn't underestimate how big of a difference that is as well within the culture.
What else, Seth?
Doing right?
Are we doing right?
This is sort of a tepid reply. I think the church kind of tried to do something right with the Mormons and Gays website.
Uh-huh.
Although then they did everything wrong by not promoting it the way they do everything else. I still hear from people who go, when I reference it, go, that's not a thing. The church never did that. Bishops say that.
Really?
And I'm like, how do you not know? If the church wanted you to know this, you would know this. It's
right.
Really that easy.
Yeah, it's not like we don't have a marketing arm that lets
right.
people know about the things. That's interesting.
And I have major issues with the content of the website, but at least they said gays for the first time with
as opposed
Mormon,
to SSA or same-sex attracted.
Right.
Which is nonsense. It needs to go away. Doing right. The John DeLynn thing messes up my theory, but I think the social media, Facebook groups, the Mormon Stories kind of stuff where people like Wendy and Meg, like the moms.
Meg,
who are
who's
together,
Meg? Talk to me.
Meg Hendricks.
Okay.
How she's from Arizona. Her son is about Jordan Montgomery's age and also came out very young and was also very much in a Wendy situation where they were just this suburban Mormon family and oh my gosh, now what's going on? But and they call themselves the Mama Dragons, who are fiercely, like they're not being forced into the corner that a lot of parents previously have been of choosing between their child and their church, where they're saying we are choosing our child without question. There's mm-hmm. there's nothing. I'm not going to not choose my child, and they're very public about this, and they're very out. I appreciate their work. But what complicates that is the issue with John, who also did the same thing, who now is facing punishment, sounds too strong, but is facing some kind of a disciplinary action.
Yeah, maybe.
For saying, let's be nice to gay people, Mormons. Like, we need to rethink how we're treating our gay members. We need to rethink things and be softer and kinder. and he's called into a disciplinary court for that.
It's an interesting thing because, as far as I know, that court hasn't taken place, and it kind of came out in this whole big push with the Kate Kelly thing and has quickly been like, the state president was like, meh, you know what? Let's maybe not
open this Pandora's box.
And I don't know if that's, you know, wanting to let some time settle on the whole Kate thing.
Maybe.
Could be. Some people would speculate as such.
I would,
or if it's just maybe a little bit of a cooler mind has prevailed saying, okay, now what are we really doing if we have this issue? Are we saying that there can't be? Sorry, there's apparently thunder going on outside. but by limiting the voice there, are we saying, you know, okay, now everyone who talks about something that may be uncomfortable for the church to discuss, now you need to be afraid.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly the message that's being received.
You know, it's interesting to me because I feel like I'm one of those people, hopefully, who is facilitating the opportunity for these conversations. That's why you guys are here. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is valuable to know that... that these conversations are not only being held, but also that people have the opportunity to listen in and be able to say, I agree with Seth. Well, actually, I don't agree with Seth. Yeah. And here's, you know, but to be able to see it from more and more perspectives and go, I hadn't ever thought of that. That's a great idea.
I would say that one of the other things that I think the church is doing right is by allowing autonomy in stakes around the world. You have certain stake presidents who have made the decision that in their stake, they're not going to have disciplinary action on same-sex couples, that in their stake, they're going to allow members who are in same-sex relationships to teach priesthood, to have callings, to give meaningful service to the ward. I think that moving forward, you're going to increasingly see these epiphany moments within that sort of like mid-level leadership in the church, where you have more and more locations where it's acceptable and it's welcomed for same-sex couples to attend meetings in their local congregation, to have a calling, to teach classes, to take the sacrament. And I think that as you have more and more gay families participating in wards, that within a few years even, we'll get to a point where that becomes so much more normal that we end up being in this position where people are asking, wait, so why can't they attend the temple, or why can't they have all of the full participatory blessings? Because they see and they feel the spiritual light and the gifts that these individuals are bringing to their congregations.
So here's an awkward thing. I'm going to need to have you guys come back. Can we do this and again in the future?
Yeah, sure.
And what I would like to do is when we come back, I want it to be, and I think it's going to be good to give you guys the time to kind of prep this a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to give you guys the time when we meet again to say, you know what, here are things that we can do to be more LGBTQ friendly.
Yeah.
You know, here are discussions that we can have maybe in our families, in our wards. And really use that time when you guys come back to talk about what I don't have a gay friend. I don't know who my gay friends are if I have them, but what I can do if I believe, Jesus said, love everyone. And I want it to be that way.
Yeah.
Obviously I'm not going to be able to affect the church because I'm not, you know, one that makes policy or anything like that.
Here's the thing I would say to a listener is if you have someone in your life who has come out to you as gay, queer, you know, lesbian, whatever the language is, you have made that person feel comfortable enough to share with you something that is so personal to them, that's fantastic. That means that you have done something right. If you're a listener who thinks, gosh, I don't have any gay friends in my life, I would invite you to look closely at what you might be doing inadvertently to create a feeling of unsafe space.
Because, where they just, you probably, because you do, you probably do someone,
you do,
but they just don't feel comfortable.
Exactly. That's the thing
that
you do. You do have family members, friends, coworkers. You have people in your life who are gay, lesbian, bisexual. And if they're not sharing that with you it's because they don't feel safe with you.
Okay. That's fair. I apologize. I knew that this was going to go long. I had no idea how long.
Yeah.
But I look forward to a part two of this whole thing.
Sure.
So we will come back and do that in the future date and time.
Look forward to it.
We hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week.
I'm thankful for the moisture.
and when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Amen.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat.